Hello, my name is Daniel Nenni, founder of SemiWiki, the open forum for semiconductor professionals. Welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders podcast series.
My guest today is Dr. Andreas Kohlmann, General Manager of Security Solutions at Arteris. He has over 35 years of experience in semiconductor design, software, and cybersecurity, including roles at IBM Research, UC Berkeley, Cadence, and Synopsys. Previously, he was CEO of Cycuity, which was acquired by Arteris. Welcome back to the podcast, Andreas.
Thank you, Dan, for having me. It's a pleasure.
So what changed recently that made the cybersecurity industry take frontier AI seriously?
I think the big news is really that Claude Mythos and GPT 5.5 Cyber, they really shocked the world. And there's a lot written about it. Mythos found hundreds of zero-day vulnerabilities across major software platforms, including things like, you know, the Firefox web browser, Linux kernel components, cryptographic libraries, and even some of the smartphone firmware chains. And that, you have to keep this in mind. I mean, that despite a pretty mature application security industry that over the last 20 years provided lots of products, you know, things like SAST, DAST, fuzzing that has been used to make sure that we minimize the number of vulnerabilities that remain in software. And this has really caused Mythos and GPT 5.5 to delay the public release. And it's only provided access to selected entities to give them a chance to fix, you know, any issue sense going forward. My gut feeling is every, you know, frontier AI model going forward will probably go through some similar, you know, responsible disclosure process.
Wow. How scary is that?
It's an opportunity and it's a challenge, right? I mean, think about it. Just a couple of weeks ago, there was some news, you know, that Mythos broke Apple's memory defense of the M5 chips in just a few days. And this on the background where Apple is very proud of their system security and put a lot of effort into this particular feature over the last years.
Why hasn't AI had the same breakthrough impact on hardware security yet?
See, that's what everybody was guessing. Why is it not happening on hardware yet? And I want to emphasize the yet. I see three reasons, right? Number one, software as software security had really decades to mature. I mean, you have established best practices, NVD, the National Vulnerability Database, CVE, Common Weakness Enumerations, CVE, you know, Common Vulnerabilities and Exposure. These are all databases that have been developed, you know, over many years. Then the application security industry, as I mentioned earlier, is 20 years old and has really delivered tools for software development, you know, that has been adopted very broadly. And hardware, in comparison, hardware security is relatively young. I think the whole wake-up call came with Spectre meltdown in 2018, and suddenly everybody woke up, right, and said, oh, my hardware is not as secure as we thought. I think the second reason is availability, and that's probably a very big reason, availability of open source training data that is dramatically smaller for hardware. In software, we have millions of projects in open source. For example, just on GitHub has 400 million public repositories from which any model can learn from. Open source hardware is tiny in comparison. Open course is just under 900 designs. You know, we have a few RISC-V open source designs and a few more. So there's really not a lot to learn from the AI models the same way as it can learn from open source software. And the third one is the open source hardware usage is very different. Open source software is deployed in millions of software products. Today, I mean, there's some analysis done. You know, any software product today on average, you know, has more than 90% of open source components. So pretty much today, when you develop a web application, you know, you just stitch together a bunch of open source components and put some glue logic in between. I mean, that's really it. Open source hardware is very differently used. It's mostly applied in research only, whereas production chips are developed, you know, mostly really internally They often use third-party IP components, but these are commercial IP components, which are not open source.
Can open source hardware become as dominant as open source software?
Dan, people have been dreaming about this for as long as I can think about, right? I don't think so in practice. I think for two reasons, the economics are very different. And secondly, the IP protection is also very different. So I think that we're not giving up, but so far we haven't seen it.
Then what signs suggest hardware security could become the next major AI battleground?
As I said before, Dan, I think before Spectral Meltdown, I think we all assumed that hardware was inherently safe, safer than software, right? That has really changed 2018. And the big news for Spectral Meltdown hitting Intel, you know, AMD, you know, ARM, and any, you know, modern processor design. But since then, there were many vulnerabilities found. So if you look at the history of the CVEs that show really voluntarily disclosure of security issues on the hardware world, these CVEs have dramatically grown since. Yet, on the other hand, there's a damper in that. The damper is that finding hardware vulnerabilities is and has been extremely labor intense. I mean, that's been done with researchers. Sometimes you get a PhD finding a vulnerability in a chip that is very common. You have to do reading lots of papers, you know, researching all the CVEs, CWEs, you know, analyzing research from chip companies and so on. But if you think about it, AI is very good at all this. It can really study everything that's publicly available and make the discovery process much more efficient.
Anything else that AI can offer here?
I think one thing I find particularly interesting is that AI is not biased. So it can essentially combine views, approaches from various viewpoints that humans often, you know, do not think about. I want to give an example. I mean, OpenAI, just a few days ago, a week ago, disproved a common conjecture of one of Erdős math problems, the 80-year-old planar unit distance problem. The success of disproving was really attributed to, you know, looking at the problem differently, looking at this out of the box. Most mathematicians were trying to prove the conjecture. Whereas, you know, OpenAI essentially said, no, let's try it, you know, let's try it differently, right? I think the same can potentially apply in defeating cyber defenses, right? Just thinking out of the box. So that makes it, I think, particularly interesting, dangerous, or, you know, whatever we call this.
How could AI actually discover or exploit hardware vulnerabilities in practice?
I think, Dan, this will likely be very different than software. And here are three possible components that I can see. Number one, I mean, as I mentioned, AI models can absorb an enormous amount of public knowledge. I mean, think about academic papers on hardware, you know, security, patents, hardware vulnerability databases, open source chip designs, firmware documentation, and prior attack research. That's a tremendous amount of knowledge that is in the world out there. But in particular, I believe on the hardware side, AI could you know, generalize design patterns from the open source and then extend it to possible security weaknesses as candidates for trying attacks. The second component, AI can drastically accelerate the tedious work that I mentioned earlier, right? So by stitching things together, you know, which paper fits on what architecture, you know, can I stitch it together with some software attacks and all of this, right? And the third one is, and that's particularly interesting, is AI can automate the synthesis and execution of live attacks on connected systems, can do this massively parallel. And think about also, you know, whenever, you know, it makes a little bit progress, it got a little bit further into the system, from every partial success, it can learn and use this partial success pattern to next step, get a little bit further. There's a good comparison. You may remember AlphaGo from DeepMind, it trained itself on Go, by massively utilizing reinforcement learning from a zillion games. And as a result, it defeated world champion in 2015. That was a tremendous wake-up call for the world to take AI seriously. And I think cyber attacks are just very similar. They're just a game against a system that has vulnerabilities and that, you know, you try to protect. I think what's particularly concerning, or what particularly we need to pay attention to, are the possibility of blended attacks, where, you know, you combine software vulnerabilities with hardware vulnerabilities and chain them together into complex attack scenario. Think about, you know, you use some software vulnerability to get into the system, then you use some hardware vulnerability to dig into the hardware, you know, get into some, for example, data or some memory regions that are supposed to be protected, and you use again a software vulnerability to get this out of the system. So the possibilities here are huge, and my expectation is we need to really prepare for that as soon as possible.
So why are hardware vulnerabilities fundamentally harder to respond to than software vulnerabilities?
So they're fundamentally harder to respond to because software can easily be patched, and software vulnerabilities, you know, can be patches for software vulnerabilities can be distributed fairly quickly. Hardware is very different. You cannot easily patch it. Sometimes you can fix it through firmware, microcode, or compiler updates, but very often you have to actually replace the entire chip. So that makes it very different.
All right. So what are possible consequences?
So the economics, right? I mean, think about it. You know, if there's a vulnerability in a chip discovered in a system that's very broadly distributed, the cost can be tremendous. And particularly now you have things like the European Cyber Resilience Act that has a lot of cost involved just in terms of compliance, but then also when it comes to incident responses. So that world is not just quickly shipping an update on the software, is potentially very expensive replacing hardware.
So what should semiconductor companies do to prepare?
I think the very first thing, what we see in the industry, you have to make cybersecurity for chips a first-class business objective. The same level as your features, performance, innovation, schedule, and cost. It cannot be an afterthought. And there are three things I would suggest. Number one is similar to what we have done in the software world, move chip security verification earlier in the chip design life cycles. You know, start essentially when you start with design, when you start with the architecture, and make verification part of the design cycles. Ultimately, really getting to security sign-off, similar to what we have done in other areas for chip design. You know, we had a, you know, design rule checking sign-off, we have timing sign-off, we have developed power sign-off, and so on. I think security sign-off will be a very important component before the chips go to manufacturing. The second thing I think that is really becoming equally important, or, you know, very important, is establishing supply chain visibility. What I mean with that is if you have components on your chip that are sourced from third-party providers, like an IP provider, make sure you understand what these components are, what its security posture is, and track this going forward, post development into manufacturing and deployment. There's a term that was very successful in the software world, software bill of material. I think we need something similar in the hardware world, the hardware bill of material. And the last one I want to mention is really prepare for the increasingly strict regulatory frameworks. Compliance is very often seen as a pain and costly. Why do I need to do this? But compliance gets a development organization really on the path early on to learn about cybersecurity and take appropriate steps to address those. I think the companies that adopt early will likely gain a major trust advantage here.
Yeah, I agree. Do you have other suggestions?
Yeah, I think what we always talk about is security is not an on-off switch. It's not something you just buy some products, some tools, and off you go, you're suddenly secure. It is a journey, and the journey takes time. So we always suggest get going on that journey, as soon as possible. If you step back for a moment, we have been talking about AI disrupting the software development in the software industry for a long time, but there may be a really much bigger wave coming that AI disrupting, the foundation itself, the trust in the hardware itself, combined with software. So the message is very clear. I think we still have time to prepare, but we got to get going, Dan.
Thank you very much for your time, Andreas. A great conversation. You know, we spent years talking about AI disrupting software development, but, the next wave may be much bigger, AI disrupting trust in the hardware itself. So, to me, the message is clear. The semiconductor industry still has time to prepare, but maybe not as much time as it thinks.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening and have a great day.